Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you for tuning in with us today. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with engineer Mike Murphy and our Milford Township neighbor Pat Schlierbaum. And because KHOI is the heart of our Iowa community, Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, will join us later in the hour to share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages. Pat, you know, there are a number of northern migrants that they're continuing to fly through, and they stop by on my property. I've been seeing all kinds of warblers, flycatchers, plenty of northern flickers, and I heard that one merlin has been spotted in central Iowa. That's a northern bird about the size of American kestrel.
The merlins are falcons that are seeing somewhat of a recovery, and we are seeing more and more merlins, particularly out of the northwest sector of Iowa. But I'm really liking those flycatchers that you mentioned, the little bird with the flat top. And they're delightful. Once you see them on a perch, they'll go out and hover and grab an insect and then go right back to the same perch. And it's all the hovering and flight that you can really enjoy the migration all in one little moment
of
excitement.
It's excitement for sure. They do it on the fly, I guess, is how you like to say that.
With the flycatchers, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kingbirds, eastern phoebes, leash flycatchers I'm seeing.
Oh,
okay. They're great.
All right. Hey, you've got an announcement there.
Yes, the Iowa Monarch Habitat Project will be offering two trainings for people to learn about the Integrated Monarch Monitoring Program. That's IMMP. The protocol to collect data on monarchs in Iowa. The nationwide IMMP project is set up to be a citizen science program. Local volunteer recruitment in Iowa has been low. Conservation Corps Iowa received grant funding to collect the data and to help recruit volunteers. IMMP field data includes a flowering plant survey, milkweed density and diversity, egg and larvae count, and an adult monarch survey. Volunteers can survey one of the random pre-selected sites or choose a self-selected location for data collection. Two trainings will be offered free of charge and at these locations: Southwood Conservation Area in Woodbury County over in far northwest Iowa, Tuesday, September 21st from 6:30 to 8 p.m., and at the Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge in Jasper County, just to our southeast, Wednesday, September 22nd, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Although the training is free, we request that you contact the Conservation Corps Iowa office to register, and that's with Amy Yoakum, 515-412-7130, or send an email to amy.yoakum@conservationcorps.org. And that's Amy, A-M-Y dot Y-O-A-K-U-M at Conservation Corps, all one word, .org.
Thanks, Pat. And, you know, to hear about another citizen science project, I visited recently with Jolie Wollers and Robin McNeely about a project that the three of us are involved in.
My name is Jolie Wollers. I'm a retiree.
You are a retiree, so that means you have all kinds of time to volunteer, okay?
That is one way to look at it, yes. I'm Robin McNeely. I'm not retired, and I work at Iowa State University.
Okay. We're going to talk about citizen science. You could consider yourself citizen scientists. The project we're talking specifically about is the bat survey that has been conducted for a number of years. Jolie, what was it about this project that attracted you?
Well, I love bats. I think they're fantastic. Anything that goes out there and controls the mosquito population is an absolute friend of mine. But I always thought bats were fabulous, and they've had a bad rap from a lot of people. Over the years, my former occupation as a conservation officer, it seems like I was always sticking up for bats because people were always horrified when they were in their house, and I don't want them in my house necessarily either, but I don't look at them as being a scary, awful creature. I think they're a fascinating creature. I wanted to do what I could to help the population of bats in general. Similar things. I have always loved bats. I just think they're wonderful little creatures. They have issues lately with the white nose syndrome, and I know their populations are going down, some of them. The DNR wants to see where the different species are in Iowa and try to get a feeling for the population level. So I want to be able to help with that, and doing the survey is a way I can help and give back some of my time to help the little guys and gals.
Okay. For the listeners, white nose syndrome is a fungal disease that is spread into the bat colonies, and it's not so much that it's lethal to the bat, but it irritates them and wakes them up during their hibernation time period, which means they use more energy, and if they use too much energy, then chances are they will not survive the hibernation period, which is wintertime. So, how long have you been involved with the study, Julie?
It's been at least 4, maybe 5 years that we've been participating as volunteer citizen scientists with the Bat Project. Yeah, we started with a walking route the first year, and then the study organizers decided they weren't going to do walking routes anymore, and so we shifted to a Story County driving route.
What is the difference between a driving and a walking route? Do you have a backpack set up for your walking route?
That's kind of the way we did it. We had a little receiver that was going to pick up on the sounds of the bats. We were assigned a park in town so that we had the receiver on kind of a backpack, and we just hiked around in the dark. I don't remember how long it took us, but we covered every inch of that park multiple times over.
I think it was about an hour.
Yeah.
Did you have a specific route you tried to follow each time you did it? So you did the same route?
We only had to do it once.
Once per season?
Yes, once per season, and it ended up only being once. The direction was just walk around the park and keep moving. It was Emma McCarthy Lee.
Okay.
We did the perimeter. We tried to find some trails into the woods. But the park isn't very big, so we just kept doing it over and over. If I recall, they gave us a time limit. We wanted to keep moving.
Okay.
So the driving route is much better because we put the receiver on the roof of the car. The microphone is attached with the suction cup, and then there's a GPS unit that's attached to the car with a magnet so that the signals that are received that the bats give off on their signature, they can be located. We drive a prescribed route at 20 miles an hour. It's 26 miles, I think, roughly, at 20 miles an hour. So, yeah, it takes us over an hour.
What part of the county? Do you do the southern part or the central part?
We start at Hickory Grove, work our way back to Ames.
Okay.
South of Ames.
So that's kind of that's almost the southern part
I
of the county then. Can you hear the bats when you're driving? Or do you see them when you're driving?
Yes and no for both. When we first get started, usually it's not long. It's about a half an hour, 45 minutes after sunset or so. And so when we first start out, we're close to water. So we're close to a treed area. So it's some good bat habitat, and they're just starting to come out. So we can get lucky and actually see them, and that's fun and exciting. We just like to watch the bats fly. Then the way the receiver works, and we've just changed technology in recent years, so it's changed a little bit, but we can hear what sounds like the bats as they fly over, and we'll get an indication on the receiver that there's a bat in the area. And, and when it gets to be completely dark, we don't see them at all.
Yeah.
That's the only feedback we might get is just a little squeak, a little noise on the receiver.
Yeah. This last year they changed the receiver, so it's... We don't even hear that. We just see a count on the screen that shows a number went up. So we're guessing that means that it recorded another bat sound.
Yeah, my understanding is that the software is such now that it can differentiate it when it's a bat, and it'll register that click. That was the way it was explained to me when I...
Right. Julie Blanchong. I
so
gotcha.
She talked about the general overview.
She told us they can tell the different kinds of bats apart
different
based
species.
On their signature.
I think that's cool.
A pretty cool thing to know.
Yeah. That initial setup we had also do it, but what I liked about that was you could hear when it was a bat.
Mm-hmm.
like you say, during the dusk, you could maybe see one zip across and hear it.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. It was. Mm-hmm. So. It's not just you driving in the dark, not knowing if you're picking up anything.
Now, do you drive your route once and then drive it with? Have you done that every year to make sure there isn't a road construction situation you're going to do, or do you just go out and drive?
We just, quite honestly, in the last few years, we've just gone out and driven it. So we haven't done a pre-drive or anything like that. We've just gone out and driven it. For the most part, it's on gravel roads. We've got a couple of really short pieces on blacktop. Most of it's on gravel back roads, and we can kind of get an idea of when we're in bat habitat, so then we start to really look around and listen and hope we're going to get some sort of feedback that there are bats in the area.
Yeah. The first year we drove and didn't do a pre-drive and came to where we were supposed to make a turn, the bridge was under construction.
Oh, no.
And so we had to bat track and figure out how to get around.
Yeah.
And we did. We were running them twice those first couple
mm-hmm.
of years.
Yeah, yeah.
And so mm-hmm. we changed it. And then it's just been that way now.
Yeah.
Just to keep it, you know, consistent
yeah.
for that
route. And we've had the same route also for the last, since we've been driving mm-hmm. the same route. So we know where we're supposed to turn generally.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we do it twice now within 2 weeks, I think it is. They changed the protocol. It used to be twice a summer, mm-hmm. a month apart maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And now it just any two times within 2 weeks, which is actually a little nicer. I like that.
Yeah. And the whole idea is that you're out there, you're being consistent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when I've done other surveys. You always try to get there at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the loon thing. Always try to do it during the same time of year, hit the same lake from about the same time of the day, look at it from the same position,
mm-hmm.
and that way all your mistakes are consistent.
I can see that, sure.
Yeah.
That's the same way we did our pheasant surveys for the DNR. Exact same place, exact same conditions as best you can duplicate, and then go. Robin went out on a couple of my pheasant surveys with me.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's good to help.
Well, okay, so you're talking about other surveys.
Mm-hmm.
So beside the bat survey, are there other surveys that you guys have taken part in recently or are thinking about?
Other than the pheasant survey, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. There's also a spring spotlight survey that I used to do back when I was working. Mm-hmm. It's run by the DNR with mm-hmm. biologists and conservation officers. But there's also, as far as citizen science goes, there's also a frog and toad survey.
Yep.
All right. I have not done that, but yes, I've mm-hmm. forgotten about that.
That is a fun survey. When you're learning your calls, it's a little.
Yeah.
After a time or two, it gets
you got to get educated on that.
I guess you
one.
Need to learn. Actually, when I worked for Natural Resource Ecology and Management, I got a hold of the frog call learning tape
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they had, and I would listen to that at work. I didn't know such a thing existed. But I could tell
mm-hmm.
the different calls after
yeah.
a while. Mm-hmm. I don't remember them now, but you can learn.
They redid it.
It's cool.
And it's now a CD. There used to be the Eye of Water. Now they've changed it. So I think Prairie Rivers, they're shepherding that.
Hmm.
That's citizen science. Do you guys think that you'll continue to do this project? Do you have enough interest in it that you'll continue for a while? Do you get a chance to find out what they're finding on the report for the work you put in?
Yes and yes. I'm 99% sure we'll continue doing our route if they ask us again next year. Every year they ask everyone who did it the year before, do you want to continue?
Mm-hmm.
So far we've said yes, and I see no reason why we would change that in the coming year. The last survey we did was in July. I heard that the summary was out, if I'm not mistaken, not that long ago. Yes, we do get to see summary information. We don't see the information from our route, but then again, I've never asked to see specifically what we've collected. I probably could.
Yeah, I hope we continue doing it. We kind of look at this as being our route and our bats. And so we like having a stake in our resources. We feel like we're able to be advocates for a species that maybe doesn't get not only much attention, but much positive attention. We feel like we're doing something good for this particular critter.
So you're trying to shine a little positive light on an animal that's always gotten a bat rap.
Nicely done.
Oh.
Yeah, that summed it up.
Anything else?
Well, in the spirit of your final comment, all I can say is I am batty for bats.
I have no final comments after that. No.
Oh, you're not a Louisville slugger? Thanks, you guys.
Welcome. Thank you.
Just like children sleeping, we could dream this night away. But there's a full moon rising, let's go. Thank you.
And that was Harvest Moon by Neil Young, and it's about 7:19. And we are going to welcome Erica Place from the Story County Conservation. I'm Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with Pat Schlierbaum and Mike Murphy. Go ahead and fill us in on what activities we've got for the upcoming month within the conservation areas.
We have been extremely busy. One thing that is not on any public calendars that you'll find on our website is a major event that starts tomorrow, actually. Story County Conservation is hosting the Iowa's County Conservation System Annual Conference, and that's going to be a three-day event, and it is geared towards directors and board members, primarily, of other county conservation departments across the state. So there are 99 counties in Iowa, so we're not going to be hosting this again anytime soon, since it's an annual conference. So it's a big deal. We're excited to showcase all of the great things that we've been able to do in Story County and share some ideas with other county conservation professionals across the state. So we are going to be very busy with that over the next several days. So wish us luck and good weather.
Yeah, and I know... I know that you actually had this scheduled, of course, for a year ago and had to postpone it. So does that mean that most of your staff and the volunteers for Story County Conservation will be busy, and the public who wants to get out and enjoy the facilities are going to be on their own?
It is going to be all hands on deck. You're right. The center will still stay open. We should have someone here to answer the phones and be at the front desk. But, yeah, you won't see us doing any other public programs or school programs over the next several days. So you are still welcome to enjoy the parks. You just won't see us in our green shirts.
Sure.
We'll be at the conference.
Now, what would happen if you had a group on a field trip for the conference and there was a member of the public who just happened to want to bend their ear and listen to what was going on? Would that be okay?
For this particular conference, we are trying to be very mindful of group size, and we do have it closed off just to the staff or board members from other county conservation departments. So not this particular conference, but that does lead me into a conference that I want to mention that we still have a few spots left in. It is our Wild Women of the Woods workshop, which is always a very popular event. We do, as I mentioned, have a few spots left. And as the name suggests, it's an opportunity for women to get outside and network with like-minded individuals who want to enjoy nature, learn more about different outdoor recreation skills, and it'll be set up so you can choose from different educational sessions. So that's a workshop we'd absolutely welcome the public to attend, but not this particular one.
Okay. Well, that Wild Women of the Woods sounds like a precursor or almost a requirement to take before you appear on one of those survival television programs that seems so popular these days.
Yeah, it's a very fun event. People enjoy it a lot.
I understand there's a lot of... I've bumped into so many individuals who have taken that, and it's really valuable. They learn quite a bit about being outdoors and have a great time while they're doing it.
Yeah, we see a lot of smiling faces, and I think one of the most beneficial things, of course, learning new skills is always fun, but meeting new people who have similar interests and then can go do those new activities with you, I think is really where the magic is at.
Yeah.
We plan to continue that conference for a long time.
What happens as far as, I know you've got some prairie seed harvests coming up, and you heard that we made mention of the Conservation Corps' Monarch program. Story County recently had a program as well with Monarchs?
Oh, man, we did. We had kind of a last-minute Monarch tagging event. We didn't publicize it very far in advance, and we did not need to. We had a big crowd that came out to help with that event. And, yes, that's a citizen science, community science project where you just put a little sticker, a little tag on Monarchs that are getting ready to start their journey to Mexico. And then that tracking information helps, generate science, generate data about how monarchs are moving and where exactly they're going and how they get there. And it's just fascinating every time I think about what those little floating butterflies are able to accomplish. I mean, if you think about a strong gust of wind, they're blowing all over the place. How on earth do they ever make it to Mexico? It's just, it's amazing. So I hope everyone is looking out their windows at least a little bit today. Chances are you'll see a monarch fluttering by. They are definitely on the move right now.
Yeah, Erica, this is Pat Schlarbaum. Recently, I was assisting down in Dallas County with Chris Adkins' program, and he mentioned that these tagged monarchs here today, typically a monarch would live a few weeks, but this is a super generation that its destination's Mexico 6-7 weeks from now. To quantify that, if they were human, they would live in excess of 500 years. It's just an amazing story of how they find that Ponce de León fountain of youth to be a generation that goes that far. It's just and an astounding feature of nature.
Yes, there's so many things about monarchs that are just truly amazing. I read, I can't remember now where this was exactly, but they noticed that monarchs were just navigating around an obstacle that to us didn't appear to be there. They would take this wide detour and go around this space, and they couldn't figure out why that was. And they realized that however many thousands or, you know, however long ago, there used to be a mountain there. Yeah. And the monarchs We're navigating around this mountain that was no longer there. I mean, how that information is getting transferred from generation to generation is just, it's incredible.
Yeah,
so yeah, there's so much to just be fascinated with when it comes to monarchs.
And let's keep monarchs with us. I really support all your efforts to ensure that we have monarchs from this generation to the next and the next forever.
In addition to that, we have to think about the habitat that we need to provide for those super monarchs, because I believe that's one of their keys as far as their startup and then having safe corridors for them to continue their travel, for sure.
Absolutely. And that's a really great segue. You briefly mentioned we have a couple prairie seed harvests coming up.
Yes.
We would love the public's help with those prairie seed harvests. That seed that we collect will be at Doolittle Prairie, which is Storey County's largest prairie remnant. A portion of it is also designated as a state preserve, which is a designation reserved for just the most special spots throughout the state. And so the seed we collect is going to, we know the seed source, we know the origin, we know that it was native prairie. So we know that those genetics for those plants are the strongest. They're going to survive the best on this landscape and do the best in prairie plantings. So we want to take seed like that and use it in future prairie plantings. And you'll get to help play a part in that. So we're going to have two harvests. Both of them are this month, Tuesday, September 21st, and Thursday, September 30th. Both of those start at 4:30. They run until 6:30. And, you know, you can stay as long as you want to, but I think you'll find that the time passes by really quickly. I think picking prairie seed is a really calming and therapeutic activity, kind of almost like meditation, I think. And we'll show you what to collect. You don't need to know anything about prairies or prairie plant identification. We'll teach you what you need to pick and put in your bucket, and then you can know that you have played a role in future prairies throughout the county.
And like
we do want sign-ups for that also. So please go out to our website and register for that if you plan to attend.
And dress appropriately for the conditions, and be sure to bring some liquid, because on some of those that I've been on the past, you get thirsty quickly when you're out there. Yeah, especially if it's windy and sunny. And I know that in the past, there too, you're rubbing elbows with folks that have an interest. And there are a few experts that can help you identify plants even at those stages.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a great learning opportunity.
Okay. Erica, is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we take a break and go to our next guest?
If you like mushrooms, it's puffball season. Get out there and look for those puffballs. They might be the size of like beach balls, volleyballs. They can get really big. They're bright white, and it's kind of like nature's tofu. So go get it. It's time to pick.
Yeah, we're going to have some for breakfast this morning here. So, yes, definitely. That's one that's easy to identify. But like you say, you've got to pick them when they're white. You don't want them to be puffballs. They're a little past prime then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Erica Place, thank you very much for joining us. And we hope to hear from you again next month. And if you have any other news, feel free to get it to us, and we'll be sure to broadcast it here on KHOI.
That sounds great. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Roger Williams on piano, Autumn Leaves, a proud individual from originally Omaha, Nebraska, but spent quite a bit of time in Des Moines and went to Drake. And we consider him one of our native sons in some ways. And speaking of sun and sunshine and autumn, we're going to welcome Susan Guiazda from the city of Ames. Hello, Susan.
Hi. What makes me think I should just remind people of the No Charge Yard Waste Days coming up.
Okay.
The first No Charge Yard Waste Day will be October 30th. So mark your calendar. There are four, one in October and three in November. Those dates are on our website. We will get people who actually have already started asking about those. You can get all the details on our website, but we will be having four of those on Saturdays in October and November, avoiding football weekends. so everybody can get their yards cleaned up and looking good.
That's one of those activities, especially if you're a kid or a kid at heart. You pile up those leaves, and you just have to jump in it and make little leaf angels. And that's
absolutely
part of fall, the Christmas of fall. So anything else?
Just a couple of other meetings. We have a city council meeting tonight that will start at 6 p.m. Those are now held in person at City Hall.
Okay.
The agenda is available on our website. We've got lots of good information on there. And then also just a reminder, our planning and housing director, Kelly Diekman, has been on KHOI recently, but just reminding citizens that Ames Plan 2040 is in draft form. And now you can take a look at Ames Comprehensive Plan. This looks at projected growth and how we will look to utilize land and build out transportation networks, build out our park system. For the next 20 years, it is based on the assumption of additional 15,000 people. But you can get information. There are two more informational open houses yet in September. All that information is on our website, cityofames.org/AmesPlan2040. So.
Very good. And I see our city attorney, Mark Lambert, is with us today. And how are you, Mark?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Great. Say, the 2020 census information came out, and I wonder if you would care to share with our listeners a little bit of information about how we go about using that information for our public interest.
Sure. This involves, it's really pretty amazing because it involves things at the federal level, the state level, and then, you know, down to the city and county level. But yes, the U.S. Constitution requires that a census of the residents of the United States be done every 10 years. And we use that to draw the lines of the elected officials who represent us in government, state, local and federal government. So it's really quite an amazing process. City of Ames results this year, and I'm going to have to toss the ball here to Susan, but I don't remember the exact number, 66,000 something, I think.
66,400.
Okay, thanks, Susan. Residents of the City of Ames. And, you know, questions are out there about, you know, how accurate it was this year because of COVID and you know, and students leaving early. And, you know, and that's all, you know, that's all great academic speculation. The bottom line is we have the number from the census, and that's the number we work with. So there's a U.S. Supreme Court decision from years ago that said essentially when districts are drawn for candidates for office, that the districts have to be roughly the same size and population. And that's to assure, you know, that equal representation for everyone. So there's a requirement that the districts be, you know, within a city or within a state be, you know, roughly the same size. So the census numbers, you know, we have it down to the precinct level. But the first step is the state legislature who has to draw both the congressional districts and then the state legislative line. Those legislative lines, so the state legislative lines, have to be in place before the city can do its work. Now, everything is delayed this year. Everything was supposed to happen earlier, but the census was delayed, and again, because of COVID, so we didn't get the numbers until September. There's language in the Iowa Constitution that says that the legislature has until September 15th to draw the state legislative districts and pass a bill establishing those and enacted into law. And if they don't meet that deadline, then the Iowa Supreme Court has the job of drawing the lines. The Iowa Supreme Court has issued a statement, kind of a vague statement, and basically said that they want to let the process play out before they weigh in. And so everyone kind of takes that to mean that they're going to sit back and let the legislature draw the lines, and then the court will issue an order sort of rubber stamping what the legislature did as a way to fulfill the Iowa Constitution. So no one's quite sure about how all that's going to work, but the legislature certainly seems to be proceeding as if they're the ones drawing the lines, not the Iowa Supreme Court. So the legislature will draw the lines. We're hearing, no one knows exactly when, but we're hearing October sometime. that the legislature will come back into special session and draw the state legislative lines and then the congressional district lines in Iowa. Once we have those state legislative districts set by the legislature and set by the state government, however that happens, then cities in Iowa have 60 days to put together their plan, which means we have to draw new wards and precincts. So, we have some city council members who are at large that represent the entire city. We have some that represent wards. And so the council will have to take action to draw new lines based upon, population in the city, population shifts within the city, where are the people at now, and to try to draw those precincts as close as possible to having the same number of people in each precinct and the same number of people in each ward. So that is kind of an extensive process. I've been studying the way it was done 10 years ago because I was not city attorney 10 years ago. I wasn't involved in this process. So I'm studying how it was done and we're looking at it. And it's going to involve our planning and housing department, our GIS folks who use the data and kind of draw the lines. And so eventually we'll be bringing it to council and saying, here's a map. Now, exactly what form that is all going to take is the exact process. We're a little unclear yet. I'm working on a memo for the city council for the next council meeting, not the one tonight, but the one in a couple weeks. So to kind of lay out everything and what choices and direction the council might give us on that.
Well, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was in a unique situation in that the committee that works to draw up the lines for the state, it's a nonpartisan committee. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's a special committee that's been appointed, and then there's the work is really done by what's called the Legislative Services Agency, which is part of the legislature. They do the bill drafting. When legislators want to, work on legislation, they draft the bills and do research and other things. And they've got a computer program and all the data goes in there and then it's going to spit out a map. So that's done on a totally nonpartisan basis. And it's been done that way in Iowa since 1980. The first map comes out and the legislature can either vote it up or vote it down. If they vote it down, then a second map is produced and they can either vote it up or vote it down. And then they vote that one down, a third map comes out. They can actually amend that and redraw the lines and not just have to stick with the map. On the first two maps that come out, they can only vote yes or no. They can't redraw any lines. So it's never gotten to the stage that the legislature has actually drawn any lines one time since 1980. They did approve the third map, but they didn't amend it in any way. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens this year. Politics perhaps is a little more polarized nowadays, and so we might see something different happen on the state level. I think everyone's hoping that we will just have the nonpartisan process play out again. And I want to emphasize that on the local level, city council members don't run on a partisan basis for office. I don't even know, what the political party affiliation is of any of the city council members. It's a nonpartisan position. The lines are drawn on a nonpartisan basis. So there's no real thinking about at the local level, hey, we've got to, try to favor this political party or that political party. That just doesn't happen. We're given the legislative districts, the precincts within those legislative districts, which is kind of the tricky part, because you can't have a precinct where someone goes to vote and have it split down the middle where half the people are voting for one state representative and another half are voting for a different one. Every precinct has to be within a state legislative district, and so it's a tricky process. And, so, we're looking forward to it. It's challenging.
So just to highlight that, does that mean you can do maybe a little preliminary work to get a bit of a jump start, or do you have to wait and rely on what comes down as far as the...
We have to really wait until the legislature has acted and drawn those state legislative districts, and then we start you know, looking at drawing precincts that fit within those legislative districts. So we really can't do anything in advance.
Okay.
Or not much anyway.
Sure. Okay.
Hey, Mark, I have a question. From a resident perspective as a voter, does this mean I could be voting in a different place?
Yes, it does. So, you know, your precinct establishes your polling place. So you may have a new precinct and a new polling place after all of this is over.
But that would not be in effect in November, correct?
Right. This will all be in effect for elections that come after this year. So it doesn't affect this year at all. You know, and one thing that could happen is that, you know, lines get redrawn and you may have two city council members that represent different wards that are suddenly thrown into the same ward. According to state law, if that happens, then both of those council members would be up for election again 2 years from now. And normally they have 4-year terms. So they'd be up for election 2 years from now. And, you know, they'd have to run against each other, or one could decide not to run or whatever. But it doesn't affect their seats right now, but it could potentially give someone a shorter term of office than they were running for.
It sounds like what Susan brought up, it's important for the citizenry to pay attention and check before you vote the next time around when this comes into effect, so that you are assured which precinct you're in and where your voting area is.
Absolutely. And again, that does not affect this fall's election, but the elections after that. And, you know, the city will pass their, establish their new wards and precincts, and then we have to send that information to the county, and then the county has to establish the wards and, you know, precincts for all the other areas of the county that are not in the city. And so, you know, we've got 60 days after the legislature acts in order to pass our new plan. The county has 90 days, and so 30 days, you know, if it takes us 60 days to get it to them, then they've got 30 more days to pass their plan. But they'll have time to be working on it, of course, and the city's plan becomes part of the county's. You know, I'm sure the county auditor's office will notify people of their new polling places and do some publicity around that. So hopefully people will know well before, you know, an election 2 years from now, if they have the same polling place or a new one.
Well, definitely, as things fall into place and we get to those times when the maps are finally drawn and accepted, we're going to have you back to clarify what went on and what we need to do. So thank you, Mark. Mark Lambert, our city attorney for Ames. And thank you, Susan.
Okay, thanks. Have a good day.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. Good talking to you.
Thank you. Anna Banana Magnuson, what have you got for us for Tune In Tuesday?
Well, in honor of your interview with the Story County Conservation guest, Erica Place, the music selection titled Autumn Leaves and No Charge Waste Day that the City of Ames hosts, I must ask you, Mike Metz, this question. Why are trees very forgiving?
Something to do with they leave things on the table?
Well, that's true, but because in the fall they let it go and in the spring they turn over a new leaf. And transitioning into this heart-to-heart segment for Local Talk, which is to tempt you to listen to KHOI, let me break in with this Local Talk newsflash. I had to see a psychiatrist recently after becoming obsessed with a specific shade of purple. Apparently, I'm plum crazy. Now, I'm also plum crazy for the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. You don't want to miss the dynamic duo today. Donna shares various recipes that we take into account the fall bounty. Lana has a few words about ground cherry jam and plums and other advice for putting food in small batches. Also, they will take a look at some news items about food, school lunch, and other great stuff that we can think about all day long. So now, what is this Donna Lana Kitchen Show? Donna Lana Kitchen Show talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, opinions, Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion about and good humor on Tuesdays at noon and when repeated at 7 p.m. Now, they're going to be speaking at school lunches, so let me ask you, Mike Metz, as one of the co-hosts of Science Bites, do you know what food math teachers eat?
Bits and bites, or bites of bits.
Well, that's good. Or square meals. Now, we don't want to be square if we listen to Sam Wormley and you today at 4:30 p.m. for Science Bites. Will you be talking about the science behind school lunches or putting food in small batches today?
Well, no, but we are going to switch gears a little. We've been working on a program on the seasons, and we're going to hold that off till next week. But today, we are going to be talking about alternative energy vehicles.
Oh, interesting. Well, that took me off guard. I was not expecting that, so I will certainly tune in to Science Bites, as you can tune in at 4:30 p.m. Now, after listening to Science Bites and feeling a bit smarter, you can then tune in later at 8:30 p.m. to listen to the Heart to Heart Messages show. On the second Tuesday of the month, Keisha Beasley and Angie Weekly always join me, so I'm looking forward to having them come on. And so from Angie and Keisha being the guests, what music will I be playing for the break? You don't know. Wrong. So you'll have to tune in at 8:30 to find out. All right, Mike Murphy, this is a seasonal riddle for you. You are a bus driver on an autumn tour through the park. At the first bus stop, two people get on. At the second stop, four people get on. At the third stop, one person gets off. And at the fourth stop, everyone gets off. The question is, what color are the bus driver's eyes?
Blue.
Well, the same color as yours because you're the bus driver. Da, 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 da. And as you are driving the bus that controls what we hear on You Name It this Thursday from 2 to 4 p.m., what songs will keep us company as we take your musical tour through the afternoon?
Well, this week we're celebrating the halfway point to St. Patrick's Day. And we will be featuring lots of newer music, 21st century Irish music.
Very interesting. I was not seeing that coming. I was not thinking about St. Patrick's Day at all, but there you go. You never know what you're going to hear if you tune in to KHOI.
That's a rainbow connection.
Rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Okay, now, Pat.
Yes.
Here is another joke connected to the Donna Lana Kitchen Show school lunch topic. Do you know, Pat Schlarbaum, what stops a lunchroom food fight?
The disciplinarian in the group exercises her principles of control.
Wow, that is a very exact answer, but it is incorrect. It's the peace treaty. So if you want to stop a food fight and keep the peas coming, keep it on KHOI 89.1 FM. All right, to close out the Tuesday Heart-to-Heart messages, this is for Pat again. What's the only sandwich worse than a school lunch?
I don't know.
Well, Mike Metz is whispering, it's a knuckle sandwich. So I don't want to get a knuckle sandwich. So I'm turning the show back over to Mike Metz, who I think he knew the answer.
Oh, I think what I want to comment on is that Pease Treaty should have been an iPodcast. Thank you, Hannah. KHOI provides a platform for citizen and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. This program is produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg. And a tip of the chapeau to engineer Mike Murphy. And thank you, neighbor Pat Schlarbaum. You heard from Jolie Vollers and Robin McNeely. You also heard from Erica Place, Outreach Coordinator for Story County Conservation, Susan Guiazda, Communications Officer for the City of Ames, and City Attorney Mark Lambert. And I have been your host, Mike Metz.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Our website is khoifm.org. Consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station with your financial support. Please go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
See you again on the radio.